very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's program. We have a solution to the tune staffing crisis that we spoke about. Also, the Mike Cullen man who was involved in an incident back in October. There's a major fundraising being launched this morning. We have it here for you shortly. Today also we're looking at stories from the West Bank. Galway GAA, they had their AGM last evening. Mark Gotcha joins us in studio on that. Galway Gardaí seek your assistance. We look at trending topics. And we also have music with Houlihan. All of that and more between now and 12 midday. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. Now, the text line, if you want to get through to us, you can text us and WhatsApp us on the following number, 086 38 33 55 3. Now, yesterday on the programme, we were talking about the lack of services in Tuam and that general area. It's not just Tuam, though. It's right across the district. But the minister, Minister Anne Rabbitt joins me on the line because she's come up with an ingenious solution to the problem. Well, I think it's ingenious. We spoke about it extensively last evening, but she joins me on the line today. Minister, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. So we know that there's issues with staffing and people getting services, and it's upset a lot of people, and we had two people on yesterday morning that are extremely upset over it. You have a solution in the offing.
I have, Keith, and look, can I first begin by apologising to the families and most importantly to the children who aren't receiving the services that they thought they would have. And I'd like to think it was unique to Galway, but unfortunately it is not. The rollout of PDS has not been smooth by any manner or means.
What is PDS?
And that's why Progressing Disability Services.
Okay.
So it hasn't been smooth, Keith, and that's why we launched the PDS, the Progressing Disability Services roadmap there, within the last month. But since that as well, even since the launch of it, because it's a fluid document, I was talking to Bernard Gloucester only 2.5 weeks ago, because we have a similar problem in Donegal. We have similar problems in Waterford, Carlow, and many more. And I said to Bernard, with the embargo that's going on in the HSE, and I said, with panels and people not being able to move on the panels, and because I'm stuck for therapists, can I actually have can I open an expression of interest in three counties, Donegal, Galway and Waterford, and actually give the opportunity for people on the panels, the OTs, the physios, the speech and language, the psychologists, to move. So you could be number 99 on a panel, but living in Longford, but you really want to come and live in Galway. Actually, number 99 now can apply, because it's like what we did with teaching. These counties are now open to movement in. And the fact that the HSE have an embargo on primary care and acute and everything else, there's an opportunity here to move within disabilities or to come out of primary care, if you so wish, and move to Galway into disabilities. We'd be gladly have you. So I've got the approval of I've got the approval of Bernard Gloucester. My own department have written to himself and the board, because that's the process, expressing our wish and our desire for the panels to be opened. He has agreed to this, and we will be starting that the first week in January.
So when you say a panel then, so if I'm based in Dublin and I'm an OT, but I really want to be living in Galway, say to be close to family or otherwise, can I apply for an OT position then in County Galway?
You can, if you're on that panel. Of course you can. And that's the problem. People would have been waiting for jobs to open up. And we know the HSE have huge challenges when it comes to recruitment, because it takes about 13 months to move through the whole process. It's absolutely unbelievable. And under the stewardship of the Chief Operations Officer, previous one, Breathe Crane Roach, and now John Fitzmaurice, we have our own HR team as well in Galway, as they do in Donegal. So actually, when people send in their CVs and they're on the panel, and they will be able to do the interviews internally themselves and move this on at a very quick pace.
And how are you getting over this embargo then?
Because I have a derogation. I managed to negotiate a derogation for disabilities, Keith, when the embargo set in. Both myself and the Secretary General, ASIC, Colm O'Connell in the department, met with Bernard Gloucester and met with Kieran Mulvey in the department to say, actually, we're in a crisis in disabilities. We can't have an embargo. I have secured 700 funded pay laces over the last 3 years, but can't fill them. We can't have an embargo. We need to be able to fill those 700 places. There's vital services needed. We're in crisis. And to be fair to Bernard Gloucester, he agreed, and so did Kieran Mulvaney, and they gave us the actual go-ahead not to be caught in the embargo.
So can you give me a practical? So we had two moms yesterday talking to us, and their children have fallen off the system. The system is not there to support them. And just give me a practical example then, that once the movement starts on the 1st of January, how much of a difference will it make to those moms?
Right. So this, we've actually started this already on the TUME team since September. For the simple reason being that some of the posts, the last of them will be filled there the second week in January with an SLT. So when this conversation started between myself, Mary O'Halloran and John Fitzmaurice last September, we had 39% of a vacancy rate on that TUME team. That's far too high, Keith. So recruitment has started, and by the first week they're telling me that'll be down to 28% when the posts go on it. Now, what will that mean then is, what will mean now is that all the other posts will be actually opened on the panel. The OT, the physio, the speech and language, the social worker, all those panel positions that we have no, we are waiting to fill those posts. We will be able to open them. And as I said to you, whether you're number one or 91, you will have that opportunity to do an expression of interest to join the TUME teams, to come to Galway, is what we're saying.
And will you get that 29% down to zero?
That's the plan, Keith. That is the ambition. That is the ambition for Donegal, Waterford and Galway. If I can blow up the panels and prove that this works, I will be able to roll this out everywhere else. I've got three counties that are being prioritised as a test case, that if this system works, we will be able to move it quickly through the others. What clinicians tell me, what the people on the ground looking after the kids tell me, the panel system does not work. And if I'm doing my job right, I have to be listening. And that's why I have now an opportunity after meeting Bernard Gloucester saying, look, they're telling me if we could open up the panels. And he goes, right, let's do it. So we've three counties, a derogation for the three of them. I have a derogation for disability, so we're not caught under the embargo. What happens in the embargo, just in case anybody rings in and says the minister is wrong, there is a risk assessment for management and for admin under the embargo, but for the OTs, the physios, the speech and language, the other posts, absolutely not. There is no embargo in disabilities.
So you're confident that this is going to assist the families that are absolutely creaking at the seams on this one and finding it extremely difficult even to get a couple of hours rest?
Absolutely, Keith, and it's a priority for me. I know we have challenges as well to the families that are listening in Roscommon, or the families that are listening in Galway West out in Connemara side, under savage pressure. We need clinicians on our teams. You can't function properly without having enough staff, and you need that mix of staff. You can't have all just one grade or one particular clinical type. You need to have the multidisciplinary approach so the kids can get, like, they are complex cases. Like, these are not simple cases.
No, these are
cases that are complex. So we need to have the whole plethora available to the child and to the family to support everything from the link worker back up to the psychologist. We need to have in situ. And to be fair to John Fitzmaurice and to Mary O'Halloran, like, this is extra on them, because on top of everything else, I'm going, and you're part of this now, and we need to push it and see that we get the results and actually ensure all our teams are work. And John Fitzmaurice says, I welcome this minister. This is a great opportunity for us actually to fill our teams, and we'll take it.
Somebody said here, even at 0% vacancy, there won't be enough staff. The TUME team cover all the way over to Loughrea, Athenry, Abenakmoy and TUME. The area is too large, and we're looking after 750 children.
Yes, and Keith, when PDS was done originally, I think there was an underestimation of the ratio of staff to children. But at the moment, our priority has to be actually to bring staff onto the teams. And if we could get that down to zero, it's an awful lot better than where we were in September, 39%, where I'm looking for the 1st of January at 28%. Getting to ground zero with having no vacancies is nearly like a utopia in my head at this moment in time. And we've a long way to go to get there. And that's why this is priority.
Well, I mean, 750 children waiting for services, could that be correct?
No, well, what we have is 750 children on that team. Okay, of the caseload of it, 50% of that caseload are opened and in action, and there's 50% not opened and not in receipt of services. That's the actual, because I got this last week from talking to John and Mary, to those families. That's why this is a priority, to ensure that all cases are open, that we know exactly what are the needs of the kids on the teams, and actually correct prioritisation of delivery of services. And the other thing, Keith, it's important to say, under the Progressing Disability Roadmap, like St. Pat's School, the special school there in Tuam, that came in under a derogation as well, that when we have our we will be putting assistant therapists, OT, physio, and speech and language into St. Pat's School there in Tuam, where they will work closely along with the senior clinicians in delivering programmes to our most vulnerable in the special schools as well.
We are short.
And the plan is then to roll that out to the special classes, but we have to get our teams right first, Keith.
Short of speech and language therapists and occupational therapists, yet nothing being done to help people train in this area. As a degree holder, I can do postgraduate course, but it will take 2 years and cost me over 20,000. Why not have these courses funded by Springboard, for example? Could you ask the minister this?
Yes, well, the minister has already addressed this on the Progressing Disability Services Roadmap, where we will be funding postgrads, we'll be funding clinical psychologist places, where we'll be funding master's programmes. And I'm meeting with Minister Harris the second week in January to see what is coming on board for next September. We've already opened 120 speech and language assistant therapy posts. We'll be expanding more in OTs and physios, and working with the local ETBs right across the country. So we're also putting in senior clinical posts. So the PDS roadmap is available for anybody to read. It was a document that was hard to bring to delivery because there was so many stakeholders involved, HSE and department. And so, to be honest with you, Keith, we're throwing the kitchen sink at this one to get it right.
Yeah, a lot of comments coming in there. I couldn't go through them all, but a lady there saying, Keith, my son has been 5 years with no service, and even with early intervention services, we're way behind. My son was discharged from my early intervention at age 6. He's now 11 and there's nothing more from the public service, and I'm one of many in this boat. It might be open, but we might only be offered one or two sessions of OT or speech and language, and then left in limbo again. Really and truly, it's not good enough.
Well, the children that are on the children's CDNT teams, Complex Disability Network teams, okay, what needs to happen is these children need a continuum of programme of intervention, Keith.
Okay.
As I said, they are our most complex, and one session won't be the cure by any manner or means. What we need is continuous intervention, and it's a multidisciplinary approach. So we need to have the full spectrum of professionals on the team to support the child, the family and the school.
All right. Thank you, Dee, for joining us today. We might touch base with you in a couple of weeks' time again and just see how this is going. But if somebody's listening to us and they're on the panel and they want to transfer to the West or to Donegal or to Waterford, they're the three pilots that you're running currently. And if it works,
absolutely,
you're going to roll it out.
And can I also say, Keith, if anybody's coming home for Christmas or has family coming home for Christmas, please let Mary O'Halloran, John Fitzmaurice know. They're our local Chief Operation Officer inside Galway Head of Disabilities. Like, we also have coming home for Christmas running. We also have people to return and help them repatriate from abroad as well. So, like, there's a suite of measures there. This is just an Irish solution to a very Irish problem at the moment with the panels.
All right. Thank you for joining us, and thanks for taking time out of a busy morning. That's Minister Anne Rabbitt joining us there. Ike, just to email you and update you on the funds received. This is in relation to the radio auction last Friday. I said 53,000 yesterday morning to you on the phone, but it's more likely to be 51,000 as a donation of 2,000, which we were expecting. We're not sure if it will come in. Thanks, Keith, for all your time and that of the Galway BFM team and the use of the facilities very much, and appreciated much by the Galway Lions Club. And that comes from Tony Kavanagh. Still, 51,000 is a lot of money. 51,000 going in onto the tables of people. Again, a lot of work went in behind the scenes for 3 months beforehand, and then in 3 hours we executed it last Friday, and 51,000 was raised. So let them all take a bowl of bus themselves, and congratulations to them. We're going to a sad story, and it's a fundraising story, and one man's life has changed forever. We'll go to that next. A very good morning to you on this Tuesday morning. We're with you right through until 12 midday. Hope for Liam, as in the numerical 4. Liam is an organisation put together by concerned people indeed and relatives of a young man who's involved in an accident. Way back indeed at this stage on the 12th of October, I'm joined by Aideen Molloy, who's the principal of Turini School, and I'm joined by Patrick Daverton as well. Aideen, first off, good morning to you and thanks for joining us on this Tuesday morning. Today's a big day for you because you're launching Hope and the numerical 4 for Liam. Tell me what you're up to.
Yes, thanks for having us on, Keith. We are a fundraising campaign to support Liam Daverton and his family in his recovery after a life-changing accident on October 12th. The fundraising campaign, and thanks for saying the number 4 there, it's hopeforliam.com is our website. Basically, there was an outpouring of support, as you can imagine, for the Daverton family after we heard the dreadful news. So we were fielding texts and calls at school and lots of friends of the Daverton family, and we decided it was really important to come together and do something for the family. So we have our website is hopeforliam.com. Within that, we have 3 iDonate pages. The Daverton family are a transatlantic family, so we've a Hope for Liam Moycullen, Hope for Liam Chicago, and Hope for Liam Boston. And so we're just getting started with our fundraising campaign. So we
would know you as being the principal in Turini and that wonderful school where all of the Daverton family went to school, including Josie, who'd be Liam's dad as well. And his mom, Colleen, who'd be a native of the States as well. She's an SNA and a secretary, would she?
She's more than that. I can tell you that, Keith. She is the heart of our school and we miss her. I'm still looking at these little faces coming down to the office, wondering where their lovely Colleen is. She's our leader of kindness. She's so much more than just an SNA and secretary in our school. And as he said, Liam himself is a past pupil of our school. I taught him, an absolute gent of a boy and a man, and Josie's a past pupil and the boys. So look at everybody in Turini, very tight-knit community, as you know. I've been, like I said, fielding calls and texts, so met with other members of the community. We're lucky in Moycullen, such creativity, such energy, and we're such a strong community that everybody just wanted to come together and do something for Liam.
I'll come back to why you're raising funds, because it's at a very tender stage, so it is, and today is a very special Tuesday for you when you're launching this campaign. But Patrick, tell me a little bit about Liam, and life changed indeed for Liam on the 12th of October.
Yeah, good morning, Keith. I'm Patrick. I'm the oldest brother of the Daverton boys. Liam, I don't know where to begin. I suppose you could say his fiery red hair is a symbol of his free spirit, and it's why it's unfortunate to see him sort of in this hospital state. But at the same time, we do have hope. There's a lot of hope, and it's great to have that hope. If I may share a quick story, last March, there's a sort of uninhabited lake at the back of our house called Strum Lake, and Cullum and Liam went there on just a nature walk with our small dog, Ted. Next thing you know, Liam gets a sort of a roguish look in his eye, says to my youngest brother, Cullum, record this for Dad. Next thing you know, top comes off, short comes off, he gets down to nothing but his boxers and jumps in that lake. I don't know the last time that lake would have been swam in by anything but a fish.
A long time now, I can tell you.
Yeah. So that just kind of goes to show his free-spirited nature. And I suppose it goes to show his determination as well, with recovery, because there's no refusal in him. You can see the fighting spirit in his eye. He's constantly trying to raise his leg or trying to talk. He is fully determined, and that fighting spirit is a great thing to see, because traumatic brain injury is a very unique circumstance in that the recovery is unique to the patient. So I think Liam's fighting spirit is really prevailing at the moment, and we just need to give him everything we can to support him.
But the situation is, I mean, that there was an incident, is what we'd refer to it, on the 12th of October. He was brought to hospital, he was shipped up to Beaumont, and he was shipped down to so he's back in Galway, UHG. He came down around Thanksgiving time as well. So that's easier, because there were some dark moments in Beaumont.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So the Reports said around 20 past 10 on Thursday, October 12th, he had his incident and he went up to Beaumont. He was immediately on a ventilator, intubated, broken jaw, and an intracranial brain hemorrhage, which is a bleeding on the brain. And he was recovering slowly but surely, but then he had a few setbacks. One was they went to operate on his jaw and he had a 1 in 1 million reaction called malignant hyperthermia. It's an incredibly dangerous reaction where your body goes to 44 degrees Celsius. And then less than 16 hours later, he had to have another surgery called a craniectomy where they actually open up a portion of your skull to allow brain swelling to see. So the fact that he survived those two surgeries, major, major surgeries in less than 16 hours is nothing short of a miracle. And he was slowly recovering in Dublin. And then Thanksgiving Thursday morning, my mom being an American, it was a sort of a nice symbol. Thanksgiving Thursday, the 23rd of November, he was brought down to Galway. So that's a huge relief now, having him back this side of the Shannon.
But I remember your great-grandparents, your grandparents, because I live beside you. And but there's always been fighting spirit in the Deverns. There really has. But it's that fighting spirit that Liam has right now.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
That's what you need to keep going from there. Aideen, just coming back to you on this one. I mean, you are crowdfunding, as you said. And again, it's Hope for Liam, as in numerical 4, H-O-P-E 4, Liam from there. What are you hoping to do with the funds that you raise?
Well, I suppose we everything costs an enormous amount of money at the moment, but this money is specifically for Liam and for his recovery, so he's going to need an awful lot of medical care into the future, we know that. Mm-hmm. We are really hopeful to get Liam right back on his feet, and he's going to need a lot of funds to do that. So every cent, if you like, of this is going towards Liam's rehabilitation and medical needs going forward. I think Colleen and Josie took a lot of convincing even for us to start this. And they were very clear this is for Liam and not for the Davern family. Obviously, we're supporting the Daverns, but this is for Liam's recovery, his medical needs. Yeah, and look at he is a treble GAA star. He's a hurler extraordinaire, a footballer, handballer, and a member of the basketball club. And all of the clubs just wanted to get together and do something for him.
So then the Hope for Liam then is the go-to place to go to then. So if it is the basketball, if it's the hurling, if it's the handball, if it's the basketball, that's the hub that they can get involved in.
Absolutely. The place to go is Hope for Liam, www.hopeforliam.com.ie, and all of the events, all of our fundraisers, everything you need to know, all the iDonate information will be there. We're hoping to have a marquee weekend, the February Bank Holiday weekend, but look at, there are creative people out there. We are just looking for everybody to get together and just to come up with their best efforts, whatever fundraising efforts, whatever you want to do. I know there's a talk of a five-a-side soccer tournament over Christmas, things like that. But the main weekend will be the February Bank Holiday weekend in Moycullen, so there'll be lots of special events happening for Liam that weekend. It'll be a Liam's weekend, as I said to Patrick earlier on. So
a Liam weekend.
Yes.
And again, the fundraising is going on in, so it's Hope for Liam, as in the numerical 4, I can't say that often enough.
Yep.
Moycullen, Boston and Chicago. And again, that's because the roots are in Boston and Chicago, and they spent... Colleen is originally from Boston, is she?
She's actually originally from Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
Yeah.
And Josie worked in Boston.
We went to school in Boston for 2 years, yeah.
Yeah. You've travelled the world, all right.
No matter where we go, we always end up back in Moycullen. Like, Moycullen is our home.
Yeah. So if they want, so that's the website. Mm-hmm. And if they want to get further details on that, they can do so from there. So is it IE or is it .com? Can I ask you?
It's IE. It's hopeforliam.ie. And within that, then the iDonate pages will be on that one for an iDonate for Moycullen, Chicago and Boston. And if you want to get in contact with us, it's hopeforliam, number 4 again, moycullen@gmail.com, for anybody who's interested in starting some kind of an event or any kind of fundraising whatsoever, to get in touch.
There's a lovely story that goes with this, because the Daverden family would have a very strong faith. But talk to me about Father Martin Whelan. What has he done?
Oh, well, he's just been such a massive support to us all. I suppose we knew how important faith was to Colleen, and we a quick call to Father Martin, and we just said, listen, can we come together at the church? Could we have a rosary? And immediately he opened the doors of the church. And every Wednesday now, ever since, we've been at the church at 8 o'clock. And we even recorded a song at the school. I suppose it's important at times like this that we can help the children to understand that they can do something to help as well. So they really wanted to, they miss Colleen, they know Liam, they know all the Davern boys, so they wanted to do something to help. So we recorded a We're a Wahar, beautiful song, and we play that every Wednesday as well. And Colleen and the family join us over the webcam. And I have to say, the Father Martin has just, you know, he's created a space where all of Liam's friends can come together and be together after the rosary. And it's just, I know Colleen has said, and I know Patrick, you'll agree, that it's been such, and Josie too, such a support to the family. Yeah, so we just want to say thank you to Father Martin for allowing us to do that.
Patrick, you keep strong. Difficult for you as well. And so we set the challenge for you. The first time that Liam is out, you have to jump into Drumlock as well. So you do. That's your. And I'll be watching you, so I will, with a pair of binoculars. But keep strong, Patrick, and give regards to Mom and to Mom and Dad and to the extended family, because there's a big gang of you in it, so there is.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all rooting for you. And I think the whole of Galway is rooting for you as well. Aidy Malloy, thank you for joining us today. Patrick Davern, thank you for joining us. And again, the website, quite simply, is Hope, H-O-P-E, the numerical 4, lean.ie for further details. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome in to today's programme. There's two talks going on, one tonight in the Abbey Tavern in Tuam at 7:30, and one tomorrow night, December the 13th at 7 p.m. in St. Anthony's Meeting Room at the side of Knocknagara Church. But I'm joined in studio by Maureen Nivedvrick, indeed, and she's giving a presentation tonight and tomorrow night on what she witnessed while recently serving as a human rights monitor in the West Bank in Palestine. She sits opposite me today. Maureen, good of you to come into us today. You're giving two talks on this one, but how bad was it when you were there? You were there as an observer, really.
Yeah, I went to the West Bank in the end of August, and I was there. I was supposed to return actually 2 weeks ago, the end of November, but following the events of the 7th of October with the horrific attack by Hamas in Israel and then the ongoing attack by Israel in Gaza, we had to be evacuated. Now, we were in the West Bank, we weren't in Gaza.
Mm.
So, unfortunately, on the 7th of October, Israeli settlers and Israeli military blocked off access to all of the villages that we used to visit where we did our monitoring work. I was in an area in the south of the West Bank called Misafriyata. It's a very rural area, hilly, isolated villages. So that's where we used to monitor. And we weren't allowed to enter the villages. And of course, the villagers weren't allowed to leave. And many of them are still trapped inside their villages, even up to 2 months later, up to today.
Now, your group is called EAPPI, and how many of you would have been in there? Did you just walk in as a pilgrim tourist, or how did you get in?
Yeah, well, we went in. I travelled from Ireland, obviously. There were people there from all over the world. There were 24 of us there at that time. This programme has gone on since 2002. It's World Council of Churches programme. So our role is to provide accompaniment with our presence to vulnerable people who are vulnerable to attack. We would monitor and document any violations of human rights that we saw.
Oh, and where did those violations go to then?
They are reported, like the UN would describe us as their eyes and ears on the ground. So those reports would go to the UN. They would be further verified by the UN, and then they would appear in their documents, you know, reports that they publish, and they publish those reports sometimes twice a week, or at least every week.
I have to say that I find it difficult when I see the TV news at 6 or 9, whatever I get to watch, to see all of the children that have been ferried hither and thither into hospitals and otherwise. There's no right and there's no wrong in this one, and you're not pro or anti anybody. You're right down the middle on this one, as I am myself, because what happened at the beginning of October was shocking. But it's so, so difficult to see children being treated like that.
I mean, what's happening in Gaza is absolutely shocking. As you probably know, there are more than 18,000 people have been killed and probably more buried under the rubble. And people, you know, are starving there. There's no food, there's no electricity, there's no fuel, no medicine. or very limited amounts. And I know somebody who's living here in Galway whose family are in Gaza. She's from Gaza. And her family have moved five times. You know, they started off, they live east of the main city, Gaza City, and they moved south when they were told to, and then they moved further south, and then they moved back up to where they were sheltering in Al Shifa Hospital for a while, and then they moved again to in-laws. And they've now moved back to their original home, which is east of the main city in Gaza. But, you know, nobody's safe. No place is safe. They have hardly any food, any water. And the big danger, apart from all of the thousands of people who are being killed, is that people will die from hunger and from disease. You know, they spent some time in a UN school sheltering, and there were like 200 people using one toilet, and the sewage system wasn't working because they have no power to
drive
it. Yeah. And so that's a big danger. So there's a huge humanitarian catastrophe occurring there, and really there has to be a ceasefire. It's really very simple. It's unconscionable that the world will stand back and allow this situation to continue. But I do want to emphasise that I wasn't in Gaza myself. I was in the West Bank.
Why have you decided then to head to the Abbey Tavern in Tuam tonight at 7:30 and St Anthony's Meeting Room in Knocknagara Church tomorrow at 7 o'clock?
Yeah, well, I intend to give a presentation which will be an eyewitness account of what I witnessed when I was there. I had to leave, as I said, following the events on the 7th of October. So I will show, using photographs and videos that I took myself, I will show how before the 7th of October, the lives of Palestinians in the villages where we were being made unbearable, mostly due to violence by Israeli settlers, living in a constantly growing number of these illegal settlements close to the villages where we monitored. I should probably explain those terms to you. I don't know, for your listeners.
Yeah, but can I just put to you, because I want to clarify this, because I said this to you before the red light went on at all.
Yeah.
The woman who's speaking with you today hasn't mentioned October the 7th.
I did.
All the Israelis that were killed and sparked this mayhem, which is ongoing. She comes across completely pro-Palestine, which there are no winners. And what's going on? Only losers, this caller said. You did. You mentioned October the 7th. You mentioned what happened there. And you are down the middle. You're not against Israel and you're not against the Palestinians.
That's correct.
So I want to just clarify that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, we observe what's called principled impartiality. But we document what we observe. And as I said, I was based in the south of the West Bank and in an area called Masafriyata, a very rural area. And so our job was to monitor what we witnessed when we were there. And that's what I did.
So you were going to explain something to me there. Sorry, Maura.
I can't remember. I think I was going to explain that I'm going to give an account of what I personally witnessed when I was there. And basically, there were three things that we were asked to do by people in terms of protection and documenting what was going on. We were asked to stay overnight sometimes in people's homes because they were subject to attack by Israeli settlers living in the settlements close to their villages. We used to accompany shepherds in their fields because a lot of their land has been taken over by these settlements. I'd like to explain a bit more about them in a moment if we have time. The shepherds were unable to safely take their flocks out on their own land to graze them as they've done for generations. And the third thing we did was to accompany children to school who again were subject to violence from Israeli settlers.
And do you wear special clothing so that you're identified as?
Yeah, we wear a jacket with the World Council of Churches and EAPPI, the organisation, on the back of our jackets and on the front so that everybody knows who we are. Yeah.
And they would know who you are.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And they show respect to the organisation and to you as people.
Well, you know, sometimes we were subjected to intimidation and from Israeli settlers and sometimes from Israeli soldiers as well.
Were you frightened?
On one occasion, I have to say I was quite frightened because we were waiting for the children coming from school and we were approached by three young Israeli settlers, and they didn't physically hit us, but they were right up on top of us and they were kind of swiping at us without hitting us and sticking cameras in our faces. And that went on for about 20 minutes. And some of these particularly young guys, they're called the Hilltop Youth, they're very unpredictable. So, yeah, I was frightened. But the point really is that I'm an adult. I was with my colleague who's younger and taller than me, and he was frightened. But you have to appreciate how frightening that is for the little children. And the children that we were accompanying were ranged in age between 4 years old up to 18, because they were going to a school. There was a primary and a secondary school there.
It really is tough, so it is, and I wish I had loads more time to talk about it. You wanted to clarify very briefly then.
Well, I suppose I just wanted to explain who settlers are in case people aren't clear. Yeah. I will be yeah?
No, we have about a minute to explain it to us.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, they're Israeli citizens who move on to Palestinian land in the West Bank, and they live in areas which are called settlements, but these are illegal under international law. And the scale, to give you an idea, the whole area of the West Bank and East Jerusalem combined is smaller than County Galway, and there are more than 700,000 Israeli settlers have been moved on to Palestinian land in that very small area. So we have to imagine what the impact of something like that would be if it happened to us here in County Galway.
Absolutely. Listen, tonight you're going to be in the Abbey Tavern in Tuam, and again you'll have a full presentation for them there. And tomorrow night, December the 13th, at 7 p.m. you'll be in St. Anthony's meeting room at the side of Knocknagara Church.
Yeah.
So,
and everybody is welcome to attend. It's open to anybody who's interested. And I will be giving a presentation and then answering any questions people might have.
And it's, well, listen, keep up the good work that you're doing, but it's very, very difficult.
It's a very difficult situation, but unfortunately there will never be peace in the area until there's justice for everybody. And that's in the interests of people of Israel and Palestinians. And I should mention that we worked alongside many really good Israeli organisations as well when we were there.
All right. Listen, thank you for joining us. Maura Niverick indeed joining us there. And those presentations tonight at 7:30 in the Abbey Tavern in Tuam, and tomorrow at St. Anthony's Meeting Room at the side of Knocknagara Church. Thank you for joining us today on the programme. Let's head towards news.